She Did It Her Way podcast, episode 215, The Higher the Risk, the Greater Reward, with Nicole Vasquez.
Welcome to the She Did It Her Way podcast, a collective of interviews with top female entrepreneurs from around the globe who have done it their way. These women are disruptors, savvy, courageous, confident, innovative, decisive, unconventional, and humble. Our ladies have proven business models, have taken risks, and have failed only for success to follow. Join us as they share their stories, behaviors, habits, mindset, thought processes, and what it is like to be a woman who means business. And now, here's your host, Amanda Bolin.
Hey friends, hey, thank you guys so much again for tuning in to another episode of the podcast. I don't know about you guys, but it definitely has gotten very cold and windy in Chicago, and the winter temperatures are officially upon us here in the Midwest, or at least in Chicago, but it's definitely time to break out the blanket sweaters. No, the blanket scarves. Yes, that, so we can wrap our entire being in it and avoid the absolute bitter cold. But nonetheless, the show still goes on regardless of how cold it is outside. And I'm super excited for today's episode with Nicole Vasquez. But before we get into that, I do want to give a shout out to you guys, let you know that the virtual summit from October 2017, the tickets or the pass and the access to it is still on sale from Thanksgiving. It's $67 and you get access to all the videos and all the content that was given from the speakers. It's on sale for $67 until December 24th. And then after that, the actual entire virtual summit is going to go away because I am clearing the space for information regarding April 2018 summit, and it will be happening in Chicago. I have more information coming down the pipeline about that. I'm just working behind the scenes to get everything ducks in a line before I go full speed with that information as well. So if you're thinking about starting a business or you need more information and inspiration to get you there along with practical and tactical tools, definitely purchase the virtual summit. $67 is an absolute steal given all the content and value that the speakers brought to the summit. Okay, enough about that. And now we're going to talk about Nicole Vasquez. Nicole is the founder of The Shift and Desk Pass. So after leaving her corporate job of 4 years ago, she started her first business, which was a dinner party company centered around providing networking opportunities. And a year later, it evolved into a co-working space called The Shift, which is a gathering place for people to exchange ideas, network, and work on projects. And as of last year, Nicole has opened a second The Shift location and has her similar third online business Desk Pass. That is definitely, it's a different form of business, but it's still within the same industry, which is quite savvy on her end. And we talk about that and how to diversify and then continue to grow your business. So in this episode, we talk about how to cut down on customer flow and figure out what to focus on as an entrepreneur, be able to find your next business venture, learn to stay true to your business model, hear ways to find investors. We also talk about her journey from leaving corporate America, how she prepared for that, and then how she's running her businesses today. This is an extremely tactical interview, and I love how she breaks it down and is very, very specific on action steps and how she has brought herself to where she is today. So enjoy the conversation with Nicole Vasquez. Hey friends, for today's podcast episode, I have partnered with FreshBooks. And before I dive into who and what FreshBooks is and what they do, I want to share how grateful I am for the sponsors of this podcast. Because of them, it allows me to free up my time to focus on content building and serving you guys, my people, my listeners, to help grow your business and create profits in your business. And now, speaking of profits and business, let's get back to FreshBooks. So you guys have all heard me talk about them, but I've never gotten into the nitty-gritty as to why I absolutely love them. So FreshBooks is ridiculously easy accounting software designed with the freelancer or service-based businesses in mind. And it is extremely intuitive, and the user interface when you log in actually makes you want to hang out for a bit longer versus some other accounting systems that can be extremely overwhelming. So I use FreshBooks for my contract work, and it makes makes it super easy to create an invoice, follow up, draft an invoice so that I never forget to collect money, and create expense reports. Also, in FreshBooks, they have this amazing time tracker, so you can not only keep track of your time, but if you use contractors, you can invite them to your team and actually watch and have them keep track of their time. So everything I just shared is from personal experience, and it is not from some script. I've actually had interaction. I've used the product, and their customer service team is amazing. So if you're in need of a software, accounting software, head on over to freshbooks.com/she, and then enter in She Did It Her Way in the How Did You Hear About Us box. So now on to the show. Fun. Okay, hey guys, you are tuning into another episode of the podcast. I'm super excited to bring on Nicole Vasquez, who is the founder of The Shift, co-founder of The Second Shift, and she is now running DeskPass, which she'll get into and talk to us about that. But I brought her on the show because she is someone who I admire about her just directness and bluntness and the operational ability to run a business. After we've taken the leap and we've started and launched our company, Nicole is someone who is really valuable and beneficial to speak to. Okay, now that I'm in my company, like, what the heck does operations look like? So Nicole, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you. Thanks very much. I'm so excited to chat with you today, Amanda.
Yeah. Why don't you give us like just a 60-second timeline, high overview of your journey as an entrepreneur so we can catch everyone up to speed on exactly where you're at?
Yes, absolutely. So I started, you know, in the corporate world. My background is in business and administration, and typical, I loved what I did, but I felt unfulfilled. I just didn't feel like I had a purpose and that my skills were being utilized. And so about 4.5 years ago, I started a small dinner party company where I organized dinner parties to bring people together to exchange ideas and information. And that gave me my first taste of like official entrepreneurship. It was just my side hustle that I did. And I realized very quickly that, hey, I can do something on my own. And I looked bigger and I found out about co-working spaces. And I obsessively researched and figured out that I wanted to start my own. So 3 years ago, a little bit more than 3 years ago now, I started my first co-working space completely on my own. I built that up for about 2 years on my own. And then about a year ago, I opened a second location here in Chicago. And I did that with a partner so that he could manage the space. So I do have two co-working spaces now. And now that those two co-working spaces are running themselves, I have managers in place. They're doing well. I am now working on my third business, which is DeskPass, which is one membership that allows you to access more than 140 co-working spaces in Chicago, LA, Denver, Austin, and New York. And that is where I am at now. So my focus now is on growing DeskPass. And it's just the next challenge in my life, and I'm really excited to be doing it. And of course, still watching my first locations grow and continue. And in the future, those will have expansion opportunities as well.
Yeah. And how do you, I mean, that's an amazing, like, congratulations on everything too that you've accomplished. And 3 years is, it seems like, I mean, 3 years is quote unquote long, but really in the entrepreneurial world to grow and do the things that you've done and that you've accomplished is pretty amazing. So when you look back, what is it that you believe that you were able to do or implement in your business that allowed you to like really move quickly and move at a sustainable pace for you?
That's a great question because I do feel at times that it was just yesterday that I launched The Shift. And then there's times where I look back and I realize how personally, professionally, you know, mentally, I've grown along the way and how quickly I learned. And that's a great observation because in 2 years of running a co-working space myself, I feel like my knowledge has been greatly accelerated, not only from the operational side, but just watching the industry as a whole. And I attribute that to being at my space quite literally every single day of the week, working 80-hour weeks for at least the first 8 months, and then going to it put some things in place like locks on the door so that it's membership only, so that I allowed me to reduce my hours. But basically, I was at my space almost every single day for the first 2 years, from 7 a.m. to, you know, 8 p.m., 9 p.m., depending on if we had events. And it sounds crazy to most people. Imagine being somewhere every single day without a break, without a staff to count on. And I put myself through that, and I very quickly, you know, I watched everything. I met every single member that came in. I made renovations along the way. And with that hands-on ownership, it allowed me to very, very quickly understand how everything worked inside of my business to the best of my ability. And then also watching the industry as a whole grow. I guess my obsession and neuroticness and my dedication and determination paid off. It's never been a 9-to-5 type of a commitment. It's a 24/7. Even when I left here, I would lay in bed thinking about the next day ahead. So is that sustainable? No. And I'm not saying that that's what everybody should do, but I personally say that looking back now, that's what allowed me to accelerate and to succeed so quickly. So higher risk, higher reward.
Yes. How did you, this is kind of a little bit of a two-part question blended into one, is how did you know it was a good time to expand into the second shift? And then also with that, was there at any point in that what point when you had started your first co-working space, the shift, did you breathe a sigh of relief or kind of felt like, whew, okay, I feel as if I've got it more under control than what I had it before?
Mm-hmm. I think I'm always looking for ways to improve and to grow. So yes, there are definitely times along the way where you should stop and say, I'm proud of myself, and to look at what you've done and to listen to what other people are saying. I think along the way, we were very fortunate to have a lot of press, and we continue to do so. And I think it's because of the personal story behind it that I quit my corporate job, I opened my space. And so, we kept getting all of this press and shout outs online and all those things. And there were times where I definitely stopped and was very thankful, but then there was other times where I'd be like, awesome, that's great, let's put that, link on our website, and then what's the next project? And it was constantly, what else can I do to improve? So, there's a fine balance I do think that we should definitely appreciate, but to continue moving forward, and I did that by listening to what our members wanted. I had to make renovations about 8 months in at the first location because we were growing quickly and members needed more private space. And when I first designed the first location, I didn't properly take that into account. Mm. And then I very quickly had to make those changes. And so I think because of my ability to be here every single day and to observe and to be open with our members and to ask them, what do you need to make this a better place? What could we provide to allow you to bring in your teammates or things like that? So I think that was a big deal, is just listening and being open to that. And then in terms of, and it's always, it's a work in progress. I mean, the first location, because I started it not in the position I was when I started the second location, meaning having all that experience behind me, there's still things in this first location that drive me nuts. And it's really like aesthetic stuff, because functionally the space works great and people love it. But I have little things that if I had started over from scratch now, I would never have, like little paint issues or little aesthetic things, the way we hung certain things. But ultimately, I know my business model and our members are happy. And as long as I provide a great workspace and a good environment, the small aesthetic issues are not that big of a deal. So it's continually a work in progress. As for expansion for the second location, what was so interesting is, again, I knew my business model was a hands-on approach. So not just having a great workspace, but having a staff, someone like myself, who is very engaged with the member community. So when people signed up, not only did I just onboard them as a new member, but I asked them about what they were working on, what they were looking for, how I could help connect them to other members, if there was any resources that they needed. And so I was very involved in every member. And I recognize that for this neighborhood co-working model that I created, you need to have someone like me on site at each location. And so in the beginning, I didn't plan to open multiple locations because I just knew that I couldn't be stretched too thin and it would be a disservice to our members. But then as we grew, I had many members of our space as well as the local community start saying to me, Nicole, are you going to expand? I love what you're doing. I believe that you're solving a problem in the neighborhoods, and we want to get behind you. And so to be honest, the reason I expanded is because I had members and people that I knew in my network saying to me, I want to get behind you. If you expand, I will invest in it. Mm-hmm. And so that's why now I've been such a big advocate of telling people, if there is a small business in your neighborhood, whether it's a bakery or a mortgage company or some sort of services whether it's a physical location or not, and you're a fan of them and they are independently owned, you never know if those people are looking to expand or if even they've thought about it. But if you believe they have a proven business model, who's to say, especially with these crowdfunding laws, that you can't and you shouldn't invest in your local bakery if you think that they have a good business model and can be successful. So because people started putting it in my ear, I was like, okay, well, the money, now I would have the money. Now who can I find to run it? And I looked into my own network and there was really only one guy, and his name is Levi Bear, and he's been a friend of mine that I thought would embody the mission and the values that we have here at The Shift. And I brought it up to him and he was on board. And since then, it's been a dream come true. He's like the ideal partner because he thinks just like me in terms of the vision and the goals that we have, but he implements them in his own way. And I am learning from him as much as he's learning from me. And it's great. So I found not only the investors, but I found somebody with the same determination and set of values. And he understood my business model. And I think that was the key in finding the right partner. I have so many people that are like, I want to start a business. Well, how do I find investors? Or who should I take on as a partner? And my biggest piece of advice is, one, you may or may not even need investment in the first place, depending on what your business is and what your situation is. But two, like it's just like a relationship. It should add rather than detract, and it should make you even better than you were without them. So whether it's investors or partners or both, they need to be adding some sort of positive impact or supplying knowledge or expertise that you don't have. They should be, you know, like a puzzle piece. Together, you can be better than alone.
Yeah. Well, I totally agree on the relationship. I've not had any sort of outside investors, but it's definitely like a theme that I keep hearing about people saying, you know, make sure that it's the decision you want to go down if you choose to get investors versus just finding a way to do it on your own. How do you, if you'd be open to it, sharing us kind of your story or any sort of journey and insight with managing cash flow when it comes to a business, especially in the startup, like how do you make sure that you're putting enough money in your business, but at the same time, do you pay yourself? How do you know when's an appropriate time to pay yourself? How do you prepare for all of that glorious stuff?
One, just like people say, you're never prepared to have, you can never be, you know, enough prepared for a baby or for large milestones in life. You'll never save enough to live on, when you start a business because you make mistakes. People are human. We make mistakes. We overshoot or undershoot. But I tried to plan and prepare as much as I possibly could, but there's no perfect formula because if there was, we'd all be uber successful and have the same methodology. First and foremost, if you are going to take a leap of faith or start a business or do anything large in your life, you should make decisions based on two things. One, your own personal situation. So everybody has a different, you know, assets. They have savings. They have expertise. They have a job. They have compensation. Everybody has a different setup from the beginning. So one, you need to be honest with yourself and look internally, you know, how much do I have in the bank? What am I making now? What knowledge do I have? What knowledge am I lacking? Who do I have in my life that will support me? Family, friends, spouse, things like that. So one, you have to be honest and assess your own personal starting point. Two, you should always talk to people and have advisors that you trust before taking a leap of faith. So, you know, if you are about to quit a job, talk with somebody that you know that can help you with your financial planning, or just whether it's a friend or somebody that you know, talk with people first. It's very dangerous to operate in a vacuum or by yourself, whether you're embarrassed to talk about it with somebody. Don't be. It's better now than to make the mistakes. So for me, I saved for about a year. Once I figured out that I wanted to start my own business, I smiled and continued my old job and no one had any idea. And I continued to work the same amount of hours I was before. I didn't give it any less. You know, I'm an ethical person. So I didn't like start kind of like slowly doing less at work while I focus on this. I gave my work my 100%. And then I came home and I, you know, from like 6 to 11 p.m. or 1 in the morning, I would work on my second thing. So I saved for about a year. And then when I launched my business, I did not pay myself for a full year. That is, again, no perfect formula. Some people think that's crazy and not doable. And then I know other entrepreneurs that didn't pay themselves for many years after they started their business. So you have to be completely honest with yourself with what you can manage. I turned to friends and family, and luckily at the time, and I tell this, you know, to everybody, that I was lucky that my family had a condo that I was able to move into, and I avoided paying rent for a full year. And that's what helped me to make it through that time. Not everybody has that opportunity. Maybe somebody still has to pay their rent, but their spouse can help, or their, you know, somebody in their family can help them pay other bills. Or maybe you work instead of just for 1 year, you save up for 2 or 3 years and then you do it all on your own. So again, think about what you have in your own basket first before you make any leaps or any major decisions. Mm.
And what was it like then to taking that first, like paying yourself for the first time from your company? And how did you know it was like, okay, I'm ready to pay myself?
Yeah, it's a mix of certain things. One, I just needed to start paying myself. So I also didn't pay myself for longer than I should, because my goal was to pay down the debt quicker, the startup debt, so that I could free my personal time up to do more. So when I started my first business, I'm, you know, stubborn and a do-it-myself person. And I knew that even with the numbers from the beginning, that the first location I started would never be enough for me to live off of. And I did that on purpose because I wanted to prove that I could do it in the neighborhood. I didn't want to take on investors or partners in the beginning. I wanted to open in a specific location, away from all the competition of downtown. And so I knew going into it that if I gave it my all for a year or two, I could look bigger picture, which is, you know, either open additional locations that eventually would sustain me, you know, full time, or have other projects, or, you know, sell the business, or maybe not sell. I didn't think of it like that in the beginning, but basically I knew that there was a bigger picture involved. So I also didn't pay myself because I knew the sooner that I paid down the startup debt, the quicker the business would be more attractive for either expansion or investors or the ability to open additional locations with somebody. So it's always part of a bigger picture.
Talk to us more about that.
I just know that I had bigger plans, and I wanted to either open a network of co-working spaces. But it started with wanting to prove that this model that I came up with for the neighborhoods could work. And once I proved that it could work, then it opened the door to say, okay, do I want to open additional physical locations? Do I want to start a management service of co-working spaces where people hire us to get their spaces started? Do I want to partner with somebody else? Do I want to just hire a manager for this location so that way it runs without me? I always believe now I start with the end in mind. So, you know, build the life you want to lead. What do you want to be doing a year from now, 6 months from now, 5 or 10 years from now, and then make all your decisions so that they allow you to to travel down that path. Like, for example, earlier this year, I knew that I wanted to be 100% remote before the end of this year, and it allowed me to make certain decisions to reach that goal. And if I had chosen to open additional physical locations right now, I would not be 100% remote because I would be tied to those physical locations. So I always start with the end in mind.
Yeah. I feel like this is a perfect segue to start talking about DeskPass. And how did you get involved with it? How has it – I want to know the differences that you found growing from my understanding, a software-based business versus like another maybe brick and mortar type business, and what you've learned from the differences and all that stuff too.
Yeah, Desk for me is the same industry. It allows me to use the knowledge I have as a co-working space owner and operator, but it's a different challenge in terms of building community online amongst our members and across 5 different U.S. cities. So the past 3 years I've spent building up communities within my physical location. So within this shift and second shift, and also within the local community that they're in. So for example, at The Shift, not only did I build a community amongst the members you know, create an environment that allowed them to meet each other and build relationships and collaborate and start businesses and projects together and all that stuff. I also was heavily active in the local neighborhood. So I'm partnering with nonprofits and local organizations and things like that. And everything was very in person. And I do believe that that is a big factor of our success, is that there was a person behind it, that people saw my mission. They met me as a person. They saw that I was an independent business owner giving it all I have. And DeskPass is interesting because I am building relationships with spaces in other cities. Even though I do visit our cities quite often, and my goal is to support and promote our spaces. There's a lot, we're growing so quickly that there's a lot of spaces on our platform that have joined that I've never met in person yet. And it honestly pains me on the inside, which is why I'm scrambling to always travel to our cities to meet other spaces, because I'm building a community of co-working spaces now. So now, instead of working with the members directly in the co-working spaces, I'm actually working with the co-working space owners to help them get new traffic into their space and get potential new members for them. But I'm working with them virtually, remotely. And it's a new challenge for me of how can I get my mission and values across to them and indicate that we are not in any way competing with them. We are in fact driving new traffic to their doorstep. And so it's just a whole new set of challenges for me, which excites me. So it's just exciting. I love it.
Yeah, I mean, that's amazing too. And it's super savvy and super strategic, like you said, that before you owned the co-working space and now you're still in the same industry, but you're doing something a little bit different and you're helping. It's not maybe your main focus. Your focus is the members, but your main focus is then working with to get more members into these co-working spaces. How have you let's talk a little bit about you as an entrepreneur, personal journey. Like when you look back on your 3 years, how have you grown the most? And give us an example of it.
I think work-life balance is huge. And right now I am a big evangelist for everything. Jason Fried from Basecamp, he's awesome. His book, Rework, I think changed my life. And I advise anybody who's about a year to 2 years into building their business to read the book Rework, and I don't advise it when you're just starting out, because I think everybody needs to make those mistakes or it helps to see it, because his book just challenges, you know, the status quo of what we think people should be doing. And now he's a big advocate for saying, like, we don't have to glorify this, I work 80 hours a week and I don't sleep and I don't see my family because I'm always working on my startup. And what I love about it is the reason he's saying that is people are working so long and so hard at these startups because they're actually not being as productive as they could be. Mm-hmm. And the reason is if you actually work from Monday through Friday, 9 a.m. to 5 p.m., and you are undistracted, you're not distracted by Facebook, by Slack notifications, by anything, and you are actually in focused, deep work for 8 hours a day, 40 hours a week, that is plenty of time to get everything done and get your work done and to leave the office or wherever you work from and have a real life. And I think that now I am really trying to embody that. And by the way that I do that, though, is by making sure that I am as productive as I possibly can be during the day, so that when I'm done with my day, I can actually go and work out and come home and cook dinner because I want to, and then keep absorbing new information by having an hour to read again. And of course, I never lie and say that, you know, work-life balance is something you can do from the beginning. And to be honest, I don't even think I could go back. If I could change anything, I wouldn't change anything in the beginning. When I was working those 80 hours a week in the first year to 2 years, it was a learning lesson for me. I was obsessed that I didn't want to do anything else. But in terms of long-term sustainability, like, you know, thank God I don't have children. I couldn't work 80 hours a week if I had children. So now it's being, and work-life balance, I'm not saying I just want to be able to go to work, come home and check out. No, right. I'm saying that I want to be so productive that I actually am getting more work done in a less amount of time that allows me to be a real person again. And for me, being a real person means that I have more time now to support other people, to go to their events, on behalf of their business, to talk with them over coffee or after, you know, at a happy hour, to talk with them about their business. Like, if I do my work as productively as I and efficiently as I can, it frees up the best version of myself, which is to continue to support other people along the way, as well as have somewhat of a social life and, you know, keep my boyfriend happy by being around.
Have a relationship. Have and that's something that I've observed and I've always pondered, in the sense of maybe the working the crazy hours in the beginning is a rite of passage in some sort of sense, where after you've done it and you get to a point and you start freeing that up, and then also recognizing, I even think back to when I was in a corporate environment, and it's like you had to be there for the 8 hours. And because you had to be there, you expanded the work to fit into the 8 hours, and you just kept yourself busy, versus then asking the question, even now as an entrepreneur, because we technically have that freedom to choose how we spend our time, is saying, okay, well, even though the status or what normal people quote unquote work and I should is 9 to 5, doesn't necessarily mean that I need to do that. Because if you can, like you're saying, buckle down and get the work done and be even more productive in a 4 hour period of time than you typically are in 8 hours, and you still get the same amount of work done, then just stay hard focused for that time so that you can. I love that. And that's something, I mean, I personally, like, I try to do that every day, and I'm not always successful, but it's definitely like a great reminder to just tell yourself in the moment when you want to check Facebook or you want to do something and get distracted, that you remind yourself is the reason why you're staying focused, so that you can do it in this amount of time and then be able to be fully present in other situations. Because you are, like, I see you at so many events in Chicago. You're so good at that, making time and supporting other women and doing that. And that's amazing.
Thank you. I mean, I've had many mentors and people that have helped me along the way, and I will never stop doing that for other people. Cause I think it's only right. I mean, and also, I mean, I believe obviously co-working is based on sharing of resources and encourages collaboration and community. And if it wasn't for the great members in my space that I've turned to when I needed help, you know, my business would have failed if I wasn't able to make the renovations to increase our membership and to earn extra revenue. So, it's a part of me. I completely believe that we should support each other along the way and make time for other people.
Mm. Yeah, absolutely. Okay, so I have a few last questions. You already answered the book one. I always ask that, so rework. And then another one I have is, what is the next piece of your business that you are going to hire or outsource for?
That's a great point. I think I recognize, so now obviously I have 3 different businesses, and I have to be fully present. I want to give my all to the business that I'm focusing on, which is DeskPass. And so to do that, I had to walk away from the shift in second, not walk away. I'm sorry. I cannot be there on site because I don't need to be there anymore. So I think I already hired I call them the shift superstar team. So I have a superstar team of managers at the first location that is taking over. And they need to start doing the sales, because even though they were managing the space operationally, I still got all the emails in terms of people who wanted to come in for tours and things like that. And so I was worried, because sometimes as an owner, you give your all to everything. And so you're always worried that anything that can bring a new business, you want to be the point person, but you want to handle it because you know you will make sure that that person has the best tour, that they sign up, they have the best experience. But ultimately, I needed to turn over those responsibilities to our manager so that I didn't have to do that anymore. So I would say not just the operational stuff, but the sales stuff, which makes me nervous, because without sales, we will fail. And so I had to think backwards and said, okay, if I have to turn over sales, and I'm worried that I do sales the best because I give the best tours and I explain it, like, what is it that makes me the best at sales? And it's explaining our story. It's explaining what they get, which is more than a workspace. And so I had to create like a formal community management training program that I implemented, that I met with our managers and put them through. And really it was just explaining to them the bigger picture and the opportunities in front of us, and then how we need to translate that to potential members. of the full experience. And so for me, it's sales, sales. And then for DeskPass, it's social media. As much as I love social media and I think it's completely necessary, I cannot stand to schedule posts and to think of content in advance, and it drives me nuts. And so I have an incredibly awesome intern that I'm very blessed to have, and she handles all of our social media posts. Yeah.
So I love it.
Social media and sales. And it's because those are not the things that I love to do. Can I do them well? Yes. But should I be doing them when I should be focusing on other things? Yeah. My time is better spent doing other things and not sales and social media.
I love it. This has been amazing, Nicole. Thank you so much. Can you share with my listeners where they can find out more information and visit and just check out your businesses?
Sure. Yeah. If you live in Chicago, LA, Denver, Austin, or New York, you could visit deskpass.com and get a membership with us. You can use my last name as a discount code, Vasquez, and get a little added discount there. But anybody can go to the website and learn about all of our locations, and we are expanding to more cities. So if we're not in your city yet, stay tuned. We will probably be there soon. If you live in Chicago, you can go to theshiftchicago.com or secondshiftchicago.com. Or if you just live anywhere in the world, which I'm sure you live somewhere, I'm on Twitter at Nicole R. Vasquez.
Awesome.
You find me there.
Yay. Thank you.
Thank you. This is awesome. I appreciate everything that you're doing. And thank you for bringing this content to people. I know that podcasts like this and stories of other people were an immense help along the way, kept me from quitting, kept me inspired. And it still helps. I still listen to podcasts every day. And no matter what stage I'm at, I listen to other people's stories and how they did it. And I think it's the best way to learn. So thank you for everything that you do.
Oh, well, thank you. Again, if you're just starting out with your business and you need an accounting software that is simple and easy to use, check out FreshBooks at freshbooks.com/she and enter in She Did It Her Way in the How Did You Hear About Us box.
Thanks for tuning in to the She Did It Her Way podcast. Did you like this episode? Head on over to iTunes.com to leave us a rating and a review. We would love to hear from you. And don't forget to check out shedidithirwaypodcast.com, where you can subscribe to our email list so you can receive the inside scoop on our latest episode released each Monday. Now, do us a favor and go make it a great week.